Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
It was a thrilling race, so we're going to be nice and loud. And enthusiastic.
Jesus.
Oh, crap. Getting ahead of ourselves. Three-word race review.
No, you had a backup as well as a normal one.
No, but
one.
I just had like one of those mind blanks.
Oh, okay. Quick, you need to go straight to it.
It's only three words. Anyway,
it's okay. Tradition.
Okay. Straight in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another podcast. Episode 7. We're on 7 already. Crazy stuff. We're going to be talking about the Canadian Grand Prix, as you would have imagined. I'm Matt.
I'm Jess.
I'm Sam.
I'm Tommy.
And yes, this is not Alistair, this is Sam. Sam, introduce yourself, let us know who you are, what are you?
Good question. I'm Sam, I'm a YouTuber, I run a channel called Seen Through Glass, which is a bad rip-off of Top Gear, but I'm an
oh,
F1
sell
obsessive.
Yourself.
Check it out, yeah.
But you're a big F1 fan.
F1 obsessed since 6 years old. So.
6 years old, so we thought it'd be a good idea to bring you along.
I basically begged to come here. I appreciate you pretending like it was you inviting me, but I genuinely begged to come on your podcast, and I'm so pleased to be here, because you guys are my ultimate entertainment on long road trips.
Honestly.
I swear. So
ultimate.
Yeah, ultimate.
I enjoy the ultimate.
Can we quote you on that?
Yeah, yeah. Please. Yeah, yeah. I'll get my agent to invite you. I'm a YouTuber. I have an agent.
So how we usually start this, as you will be aware, with our ultimate experiences, is the three-word race reviews. Jess was panicking before we were rolling, or potentially it might still be involved. But Jess, you've had enough time to panic.
Okay.
Give us your three-word race review from the Canadian Grand Prix.
Fancy a Heineken?
Yes, I do.
Because, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen sponsorship displayed in
so
that way.
Aggressive, I think you'd
it
call
was
it.
Very aggressive. Mm. I mean, do you know what? If they'd have just done one or two of the parts, I might be sat here going, actually, great idea, gonna nab that. When I run Grand Prix myself, but
Jess's plan.
I've got ambitions, all right. I'm Charlie Whiting. But yeah, I think like some of them were really cool, but altogether it was just too much.
Yeah,
like it, so much on the eyes. And
it might as well have just written "buy a Heineken" already across the track.
Like, but don't drink and drive.
But don't drink. Yeah, exactly.
It's so weird.
Interesting mix, isn't it? Yeah. I went to a Heineken event in Vietnam. Promoting Formula One, and I've never been handed so much Heineken with Heineken brand. I mean, it was great because I had a wonderful time. But they
are—they're
just very, not so well. But they just love. I mean, it's Heineken. You know, you really—that's their sort of. I think their way of targeting people is aggressive marketing. But
I actually really liked the start procedure. I thought that was a little bit different. Like if that was the only thing for them to have done,
that's pretty snazzy. The stars.
Because some people thought they were Maple Leafs at first, and then once you got to like lap 10 and there'd already been about 100 red stars everywhere, you go, okay, it's advertising.
Okay.
It was weird.
So what was your three-word race review? Give it to me.
So, okay, Jess, I'm a massive Lewis Hamilton fan as well. Yes, but Jess, I apologise because my
what I'm about to
three
say.
Words. Lewis should retire.
That's the title of the podcast.
Whoa.
He just doesn't care, does he? He doesn't. He so doesn't care. And as a Formula One, as a Lewis fan, as a Formula One fan, I turn on the TV to be excited, and he is just so out of the game, moaning and complaining, doing nothing. And I'm sitting there going, well, my favourite guy's bored. I'm bored as well.
I have to agree with you.
He's done it.
Yeah,
that's
amazing.
I love it.
Sam's completely right. It's the one thing you don't want to hear is, oh, well, we might as well give up. Which is what he kind of came across
and
as doing.
And he's done it in the last few races as well. He did it in Monaco, complaining about, oh, the race was really done, despite beforehand being like, Monaco's great, yeah, blessed, all that kind of stuff. And then, oh, it's really boring, like, we need to change everything in F1.
Well, how un-Lewis was it on the driver's parade? They were like, do you think you've got a chance today? All the fans are here. And he's like, yeah, I'll give it a go. And I was like, come on, dude, like, at least pretend.
And we've kind of touched on it before, like, he's a very emotional racer. And I think going into this weekend, knowing that he was always going to have a power unit deficit over everybody else, I think he already came into the weekend going, well, he said actually at the end, I don't know if you caught the post-race media pen bit, but he was just like, I was glad to have finished. So he was like, I didn't think we were going to finish. So to be honest, getting fifth for me is like, I did my job. But he comes out with these things as well. Like, he was going on about, like, well, with these crap cars at the moment, you know, not alluding to the Mercedes in particular. I think he was just talking about the regulations.
Yeah, the three engines. He's like,
oh no, yeah. MotoGP's bed. I was like, come on, two wheels? What even is that?
We hardly enjoyed two wheels for a while.
Oh, yes,
sorry, Ellie.
Did.
Tommy, give us your three-word race review.
Mine is, we were robbed.
Ooh.
Not one boring yet.
Yeah,
I'm really enjoying
this. I think it was just the fact that qualifying was probably one of the most exciting qualifyings in years.
Mm-hmm.
You had, for the first time that everyone's been hoping for, it seemed like Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari won an equal playing field. They were all really close. It was, you know, anyone could have won that race, and especially at the end when they were finally allowed to push, it was actually quite exciting to watch the gaps closing, and you think, why weren't they doing that all the time? And unfortunately, it just ended up being another economy run for everyone, which ruined it.
It was a shame, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm really proud of everyone not saying it was boring. I think to finish off the set, Canada should stay. and what I mean by that is that Canada showed that it's the regulations. It's not the circuit. You know, it's the tyres. It's everything is just wrong at the moment. You know, the aero's too complex, they can't follow. You know, Raikkonen, he's pretty chill, you know, but then in the post-race interviews, it looked like he had died of boredom. Like, he couldn't even be bothered to really answer any questions. And I think it kind of showcased that, you know, Canada's have had such good races in the past, from tyre degradation. You know, remember that race, I can't remember what year, but where there was marbles everywhere. And they were just falling off the track if they went a millimetre off the racing line. But yeah, I think it just showcased that there is a lot wrong with the sport, and hopefully 2019 with the more simplified aero rules will help that.
They dropped the ball again with the tyres, exactly like Monaco, where Canada was that race where initially they got the idea for the Pirelli tyres by going, oh, isn't it really exciting when there's two and three stops? And instead, if the Hypersoft tyre is a one-lap race, it's pointless, in my opinion. It shouldn't.
I agree with that, and it's the first time I've actually enjoyed Nico Rosberg as part of the Sky team this weekend. Sorry, Nico. Because I thought he seemed a little bit controversial at times, and somebody asked the question, do you think there should be a mandatory second stop? And he said, yes, absolutely, do two-stop races, and it could be or should be more exciting. But I wonder, even then, I think Pirelli would probably still play it a bit too safe, and I'm not sure it would spice it up enough. But yeah, you should not be able to do one stop on the
thing you say about the tyres, but it's difficult because I think that maybe the tyres, there's nothing wrong with the tyres, and it's the fact that if the cars could follow closer and even overtake, then the tyre strategy would be blown open in that sense,
because
they're
not pushing,
they don't stay
they?
Out.
They're not pushing. They, again, it was a coasting. But they also, I mean, Bottas was saying that he had a fuel issue. Well, not issue, but he was running out of fuel towards the end of the race.
Raging at the race director, by the way. Didn't see any of the last bit.
Yeah, Max was one-ten
line.
I mean, everyone was very confused because of the checkered
they
flag.
They were like, turn it off.
You didn't show anything.
They were just like,
this is so embarrassing.
Yeah, I think they were waiting for everyone to just kind of like, oh, that's the end. And yeah, they kind of lost their shit a bit at the end.
They did.
Yeah, it was a strange one. But I don't know. And again, like, I don't know if the aim was to go a bit further into this, but
I will interrupt abruptly. No, Karen.
yeah, just cut me off.
Stop!
But it comes to the question of how much about F1 do we want to be manufactured, and how much do we want it to be just raw wheel-to-wheel racing? And because if we put stuff in like mandatory stops, I just feel like it's forced. It's not real racing. It's not, you know, just cars going flat out on a track trying to do their best, or like it's just like, oh, you've got to come in for your stop. It's like, I've always had a bit of an issue with the obligatory compound usage for tyres. Like, you have to use two compounds, but it's how much of it. I feel like F1's in a place right now where it's almost gone too far into, we have to put in things that make the racing exciting. Whereas if they could have just like, if they could just strip it back and go back to just, let's just focus on the cars and what we've got, i.e. the tracks. Because I mean, we not so much Sam, because you've not joined us, but we've been quite critical of tracks.
You're part of this, Sam, don't worry.
I love the tracks. I'm a big you fan of all count. The tracks.
Exactly. We've berated Spain, we berated Monaco. Well, you guys did.
I was yelling at my radio.
How dare you touch Monaco? But I think, you know, it's almost like a period where, do we just take F1 back to the drawing board and take it back to what we all want to see, or do we continue down this path of adding in weird and wonderful ways of manufacturing great racing, like 3 DRS zones in Canada?
And it didn't help.
And
didn't
no
help.
Overtaking.
Didn't do anything.
I don't know. I don't have the answer, but I feel like if we just strip it back, which I think hopefully the regulations next year will help.
But the
only thing I'd just touch on there is that I know there's the rumour or the talk of maybe switching to two engines as well, isn't it, for the whole season?
That's the worst thing.
If they change the aero, will surely then make our problems even worse, because the cars are going to have to run at even, you know, a less percentage of their abilities, because everyone's going to be saving engines. And that's where I feel like F1's banging heads, is you've got this sort of difference of, let's save the world and have these super, you know, economic engines, and we want to hybrids and all this stuff like that. And then it's also, well, let's be really fast and be a spectacle. And you can't really do both. Two engines for the whole season, it's just not possible.
What was that? What was that?
Formula E.
Formula E. F1's always been like that, though, where they're like, they've got this great idea. It's like... classic, like 2017, they changed the cars, they made them look really awesome, everyone's like, oh, look how good they look, they're setting lap records, and then everyone goes, oh, the racing's a bit rubbish though, isn't it? And you've always had that, like, what is Formula One?
Yeah.
It's always changing and adapting, and a lot of stuff does contradict each other, so it's so, you know, you have all this aero which is stopping overtaking, but then you put in DRS and hypersoft tires and all this kind of stuff, and it just counteracts it.
Yeah, because I guess, like, Liberty Media are kind of on a two-pronged approach right now, in the fact that they're trying to make racing exciting, so they're changing certain things to do with racing, but then they're also trying to attract mainstream fans. So they need it to be sexy, they need it to be like, they're the fastest, and they do all this and that and the other, but for me, like, that's such short-sightedness, because as soon as somebody sits down, if a new fan, I can't remember who was saying this on the coverage, but if a new fan sat down and watched Montreal... I don't know if they would stick around. But again, because it's the complicatedness of F1.
I just feel like we are very critical of this sport, aren't we, as fans? And therefore, we create this sort of culture of attacking always. And over the years, there have always been boring races. There have been boring seasons. Like, there was definitely a season where Vettel dominated that I basically didn't watch any races. Yeah. I just knew he was going to win.
You just caught it on the highlights.
Like,
he's
Vettel. Sure. Oh, wow. and so, but I think at the moment, there's this kind of culture of us all going, what's wrong with F1 and how can we make it better? We've had two, maybe three boring races on the trot, but we had some pretty spectacular ones, and I know you guys with Baku and stuff like that.
Yeah, like four amazing in a row, didn't you?
Yeah, and spoiled, there really. will be great races. I don't think Paul Ricard's going to be one of them, but I know that's coming up later. but I just think that there's also an element where we just need to kind of stop attacking. And and even Christian Horner, I remember that he did an interview as well at some point, whether this weekend or last, and they said, oh, we've got these new regs coming in next year, more overtaking. And he went, no, I'm not sure it's going to help. And you're like, come on, just say something. But like, yeah, we're really hopeful. Yeah, you know, just lie. So that we can all be a bit more positive and stop giving the sport such a hard time.
I think Vettel said that in the press conference as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I was about to... I'll read out the quote. So it says, he said, I don't know why people today are so short-sighted. Next week the World Cup is starting, and I promise you that a lot of the games will not be exciting, but still people will watch it. But some games will be incredible.
It is. I don't know any other sport that is held under such a microscope.
Yeah. But even by the fans.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not, we hold it to ransom, don't we? Really.
And no other sport changes so much. Like, if there's 10 nil-nils in the World Cup in a row, do they go, right, we're changing the goalposts, we're making, like, we're having two footballs now.
But the argument is that football is a very simple game.
Mm. Yeah.
In the fact that anyone can, well, not anyone can play it, but it's just, you know, 11 men aside with a ball, kick it into two ends. F1 is...
Football fans raging right now. Yeah.
There's so much water you're talking about.
I mean, I actually used to play football, but offside. I don't watch it anymore. Like, I don't watch it, like, because it... For me, football is... Yeah.
Pedal carts.
That's what I'm saying. Like, just focus on the racing. Like, go back to raw racing and I'm sure the rest of it will come. But actually, to add to Sam's point, I think... That's what I was kind of trying to get at with my previous point, but you were much more eloquent.
I took all of your points and summarised them.
There's almost been too many changes. So it's almost like we change it so much that there's not enough time to kind of work out, okay, well, how do we just make what we've got work? It's very reactive sport in terms of like that. Like there's never been this many changes in any other sport that I'm aware of. So it's hard to keep up.
I'm looking forward to sprinklers next season, maybe. Sprinklers. Who knows? Right. I know Liberty Media has probably been taking notes for the last
bring on the snow machine.
For fear of leaving Canada behind, let's turn to some three-word race reviews from our fans. Mika Mostert says Lance can't drive. Ooh. Arjun Agastya says Kubica replaced Stroll. Ooh. And Hugover 350, fly Emirates literally, which ties us in quite nicely to the Stroll and Hartley crash. We have Dan Lijen says, what was Claire Williams on when she said Hartley shoved Stroll into the wall? So for people that haven't seen the race, well, I mean, why are you here? But obviously we had the Hartley-Stroll incident, and it was quite clearly, well, from my perspective, Stroll's fault. Hartley put himself in that position, in my opinion. But at the end of the day, if you're going to pin blame on someone, I'd say it's more over on Stroll. But then Claire Williams said that.
Yeah, it was weird that she said that he went into him. That's a classic team principal defending their driver. Personally, I think it's more of a racing incident. I know that Stroll, yeah, he did mess up, but if you watch that first lap, Ocon got around the outside. So
unreal move.
Yeah, really good move. Hartley tried to do the same, but if you watch his onboard, he does actually go over the grass in the first part of the corner.
Yeah.
And like you say, he is putting his car in a very odd place, which, let's be honest, if that was Grosjean, we'd probably all be blaming Grosjean, wouldn't we?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. It's an interesting point. I mean, Ocon, you can't really compare Ocon's one because Ocon had already had nailed the exit. He'd seen that Nico Hülkenberg had run wide. He just basically undercut him and went all the way around the outside.
Whereas such Brendan, a bad run, didn't he?
Yeah, I understand, you know, Brendan, I don't know, does he feel like he needs to prove something? Like, obviously, with this whole news about Lando Norris coming in and basically taking his seat.
I don't know how any driver can carry on with that kind of pressure on the back of, like, in the back of your mind the whole time. Like, I know you just kind of have to grin and bear it and prove them wrong and do your best, but... I don't know if I could ever walk around with knowing that your team doesn't even want you there.
Yeah, wants to get rid
of you. That must be insanely just. I mean, yeah, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't handle it. So
that's why they're the best sportsmen, isn't
exactly.
it? That they can pick themselves up, like Vettel, for example, and Hamilton have been through those rough patches and gone on to win championships. That's why they're the top of their game. Yeah. Really. Mm.
Do you not think Stroll was in a similar kind of place, maybe not in so much jeopardy over his seat, but at least feeling the pressure or feeling the frustration of a car that is definitely not meeting his expectations or anyone's, and arguably was either on the wrong line or carrying too much speed or just not driving?
He had a stellar start, didn't he?
He had a good start.
He had a good start off the line, he was passing people, and I think maybe, I don't know, but... You know, maybe he was just a bit like, I'm not meant to be here. And then kind of was on it. He's a bit caught up in everything.
He's dizzying heights of 14th or something.
I'm doing it. Like, waving everyone.
I think that was the trick.
It's Canada. We're going to win the race.
I think he's probably a bit like that. I feel like he just is so determined to prove himself, or maybe try and do a Leclerc in the Williams, you know, try and
nice
perform.
Nice pronunciation.
Calm down.
Nice.
We'll
get on to him. We'll get on to him. No worries.
The last half of the podcast, isn't it?
Yeah.
But beating the car, I think he's trying to outperform the car to try and show that he's a proper talent, and unfortunately maybe he doesn't have the abilities in the car isn't there. So I agree with you. I think it was a racing incident.
Yeah, imagine paying all that money. Well, his dad paying all that money to get the worst seat in F1.
Because he can't do anything in that car. And I know people say get Kubica in that car, but what can he do?
I think it would be disappointing as well.
Yeah, he even said it was embarrassing when he drove an F1. He said it was embarrassing.
I don't think he was
like, I don't think he'd want to be there. He'd rather have the Toro Rosso drive or something.
Yeah, he's riding a wave of this amazing PR.
Exactly.
Circus that's going on around him that could put him in a different car.
At the minute, he's got nothing to lose. Exactly. But if he gets in that Williams seat, I think he's got everything to lose.
That's it.
He's doing an even more extreme version of Alonso, where Alonso's in a mediocre car and just talks about how amazing and how he'd win every race if he was in the best car. Kubica is getting all this praise and he's not even driving.
Yeah.
He's just like,
yeah,
I'm great.
Just like, chill, yeah, great. I could probably overtake Leclerc.
Just grab a Heineken and sit back.
Yeah, I'd win. Do you want to drive? No, I'm all right.
No.
Did you say grab a Heineken?
Grab a Heineken.
No, sorry, it's picked up on that.
I don't feel like it works.
It might be controversial, but I don't think Kubica, from what he showed in the test he did at Abu Dhabi, and he wasn't that quick. Like,
well, Sorokin was faster.
Yeah, Sorokin was quicker than Kubica, and people are like, oh, give Kubica the seat, blah, blah, blah. I don't think he's got what he had.
No.
The injury is going to
I think that's probably what it would
have
come down to, wouldn't it? I think a lot of people thought it was money, but I think as many people that I've tried to speak to have just said that, unfortunately, he's just not quick enough, and he might be, but the role he's taken is fantastic rehabilitation that might eventually end up, end of the season, he's there, but I think they genuinely thought Sorokin and Stroll would be a quicker pairing, which is upsetting for us as fans that want to see Kubica back. But
yeah, you've got to feel sorry for Sorokin a little bit, that he's, through no fault of his own, he's got a Formula One drive for being like quicker than Kubica, if that's how they chose it. And because he sort of ruined the fairy tale. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's controversial comments coming out everywhere. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. But yeah, he kind of ruined the fairy tale a little bit. So people are very anti Sorokin.
Yeah.
So we had Lance and Brendan, the two retirees. The other retiree was Fernando Alonso from his 300th GP.
Ooh, the best driver in the world.
Okay, wow.
Wow.
You can clearly see you're a Hamilton fan. Yeah.
I will never forget 2007.
Never forget.
Yeah, it's weird how, like, Alonso... I used to hate Alonso when he was fighting against Schumacher, and now I'm like, oh, I'd love to see him do really, really well. It's that whole underdog
mentality,
I think.
It's weird, isn't it, how it changes in Formula 1. I see that a lot.
It's the curse of the best car. Everyone's the same with Vettel, like... Even like we see it in our comments that when Vettel was dominating, every comment was, "Oh, give Lewis that car, he'd be the man." And now it's, "Oh, he's only winning because he's got the best car," or all this kind of stuff. And it's almost that little curse of the best car. And Alonso's there in his tractor, going like, "Oh, I'd win in those cars."
They got the best chassis in F1.
Best chassis in F1.
What a load of trash that is.
Yeah. Like, well, they would have been out in Q1, wouldn't they, if it wasn't for the two incidents in qualifying. Mm. They quite easily, both of them could have gone out in Q1, and Red Bull are battling for pole position.
Although it was quite poignant that Alonso was in P14 when his... Number 14 for his 300th Grand Prix. That's something quite like...
Maybe he retired.
Did on purpose.
And he retired.
Like he should.
Ooh.
Him and Lewis can go off into the sunset.
So you don't think he deserves a better seat?
No, I saw that claim where he came out saying he was one of the best ever and 9.5 out of 10 and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that was...
I have to say, I think 5 years ago, fine. I think when he was at Ferrari, and was it 2012, 2013?
Yeah.
I think I agree he was probably at his peak. I don't think he is anymore. And I think the battles with Leclerc are a perfect example of where... I don't really care if your car's not as good. Like, you're getting owned by a rookie. it's true. Like, it is.
God, this is turning into those savage podcasts. Yeah. I love it.
I've been bottling myself listening to you guys for 6 weeks, and now I'm like, I can unleash.
It is funny, isn't it, that he's... Yeah, it's so easy for him to say, oh, I'd win in this car.
And
You can't prove it.
Yeah, you can't prove it. He's against Van Dorn, who's a rookie. Well, it was last year and stuff. Like, how can you compare what Alonso's doing? You have no idea that, like, yes, he thrashed Raikkonen in the Ferrari. Vettel's thrashing Raikkonen in the Ferrari now.
Anyone would thrash Raikkonen
in
any car.
That's not really a feat.
But that's what I mean. Like,
He's definitely an amazing talent. And none of us would see him by the end of one lap if we were all on the same track.
Speak
for yourself. Sorry. I got this.
I think when people say, oh, the best drivers are Hamilton, Vettel, Alonso, I would have to put him below a few others nowadays.
I think something that Tommy and I think we've spoken about this before, but part of being a multi-world champion is by making smart moves, not just... And keeping friends in the paddock.
Rosberg outed him, didn't he?
if you look at his career, he's made choices to move teams based on, obviously we don't have the whole information, but if rumours are true, based on either not wanting a arguably better teammate, not wanting to be outshone, and throwing his toys out the pram and going off. Not based on a smart move, but based on stubbornness.
Mm.
So, you know, his move from Ferrari to McLaren, look where that
cash
ended him
money.
Up.
Money, that was all.
Well,
the,
yeah,
that
exactly, that as well. But, you know, if again, you know, not to talk about Lewis, but everyone was like, when Lewis moved from McLaren to Mercedes, everyone thought he was bonkers. Yeah. Everyone thought he was batshit crazy.
I think he lucked out there personally.
No, because I called it, just FYI. I can even bring up the tweet from whenever it was, saying, oh, everybody is berating this move, but watch this space. I mean, it was however many years ago now, so cringe on Twitter. But it was...
I'm going to find that tweet and retweet it.
I'm sure there's going to be so many people looking for this tweet, though.
It was on my old account, though, so good luck finding it. I mean, you could find it if you wanted to. It's not really that difficult. But anyway. Because, I mean, Ross Brawn was there. You know, you'd seen what they'd done with Brawn GP. I was like, this is amazing. This is a brilliant move, and lo and behold, he's won most of his world championships with Mercedes now. So, some of it is chance, some of it is completely outside the driver's control. Smart moves win you world championships.
That's the thing. Like Alonso is very quick to belittle Vettel's achievements, and he is really savage on Vettel in particular. Going, he's always like, oh, well, I got two titles when it was really difficult. And Vettel, like, he really lays into Vettel with, like, he did it in a Newey car and all this, and he loves to play up to that fact. I can't see that it can't be a coincidence that Vettel moved from Toro Rosso to Red Bull. Red Bull started winning. Moved to Ferrari. Ferrari started winning.
Because not forget, he won in a Toro Rosso.
He won in a Toro Rosso. And
in appalling conditions,
I don't remember Alonso winning in a Minardi.
Yeah, exactly.
Slightly harsher.
It's the same thing.
You'd argue that...
Lewis would win in a Minardi.
Microphone's getting in the way.
They're
just high five for audio listeners.
It's bad.
You actually mentioned the Rosberg savageness. He was also as savage about Alonso, saying, we all want to see that, Alonso being in a better car, but no one wants him because of his team internal politics games.
Yeah, because he plays games and he breaks friendships. And if anything, you know, F1 is the same faces that kind of, you know, some of them disappear because they retire or they move on. But it's essentially everybody is in this group. And if you piss off one person, we piss off one team, that's it, that's bridges gone, broken. Like, it's very difficult to mend those partnerships again. So, you know, I don't think he's been smart in that regard, and that's why for me he's not a completely rounded driver, because this is part of the game. F1 is a political game. We're seeing this with Ricciardo. Like, Ricciardo's keeping his cards close to his chest. He's weighing up his options. How much of what's going on behind the scenes we're not party to, but I don't think it's a coincidence that he's kind of playing this up and riding this wave, because he wants the best seat next year.
Yeah, sure.
So this is all part of it. You've got to play the game in F1, and I don't think Alonso has, and that's why he's where he is.
I think it highlights how Alonso, well, this is obviously speculation, but I think with where Alonso's gone and how the teams haven't really improved when he's there, is the fact that he's probably not that great at the development side of making the car better. Mm-hmm. Like, that is something that is huge for drivers within F1, is that they help to build a team and get better. Michael Schumacher, obviously,
I was going to say it.
And I don't think it's any, and maybe that came into Lewis's decision, is that Schumacher went to Mercedes. He was there for 3 years. They started to get really good the year he retired. And you know, and now Mercedes were dominating for years on. And I think that definitely has a part in it. And I just think Alonso, he's been at McLaren, what now, 3 years?
They haven't improved.
He's not going anywhere. And all of that negativity in the media would not have motivated any workforce or work staff to try harder, because they'd be like,
GP2 engine, we're working our ass off,
and this guy's just slagging us off on TV. And Schumacher, I think, is the perfect example, because he's often rumoured to have been the sort of first guy that really, you know, cultivated a whole team and had that sort of attitude of bringing everyone together and staying late and working hard. And I think
with
Vettel,
Braun, just saying.
But I agree, and I think Vettel is doing the same or trying to do the same at Ferrari, because obviously, you know, Schumacher was his hero. So I think you can see that being cultivated whilst some other drivers, and I think Lewis is probably the same. I don't think he really is very good at that, you know, bringing teams together.
I think he can be, but then when he's on his bad day, he doesn't. He's like either extreme. He either's blaming the team, which he's doing slightly less of that. I think he's matured a little bit in that respect. But even like we saw at Canada, He was 100% blaming the setup of the car and the fact that he doesn't have the right power unit.
He blamed an early pit stop as well. Like, he's very quick to jump on the radio and go, "Why did you pit me?" It's like,
it's getting a bit old now, isn't it?
A bit tired,
really?
Unfortunately.
But let's move on to more positive things. Max Verstappen, oi oi, your boy with a good drive for a change.
Didn't crash.
For a change.
Well, actually, technically, no. I heard someone going, well, technically Max did crash because he bashed wheels with Bottas on the first lap. But
I'm
was
loving
like,
this
really
voice. This voice has come out of nowhere. Yeah. It's like today. It's like the jet.
That's why, I'm an angry tweeter.
Yeah.
They do
that
sound.
Is
an
that is the voice.
Yeah.
It's in my head when I read those kind of tweets.
Whenever I see nasty tweets or comments, I just read them in that voice.
It's Radion, actually.
Well, I think you're fine.
Go on, Max.
That'd be the Alonso tweets to you. Or the Alonso fans.
I'm all over. Come at me.
Technically, he crashed, but I don't think that counts as a crash.
It was a decent. It was a decent
Bottas,
drive.
Fair play to Bottas, though. Like, I think he's been.
I'm trying to talk about your boy
Sorry,
Max.
Okay,
for just a minute.
A good race.
Do you think Max?
It wasn't particularly.
Oh no.
Special,
but do you think therefore he has changed his style? Maybe this is the new Max.
No.
I just think
he was just. He managed to get the car into P3 in quali, and that meant that he stayed out of all the trouble. I mean,
he had a go. He had a
that
go.
That go was brill.
And he was like, I think that was the perfect kind of go. Going, perfect. I'll have a go, and then. Went back out.
He kept his nose clean. Yeah. And so I think in that respect, like he couldn't have done a better job, apart from potentially take P2, but I don't think that was really on the cards. But
he very nearly got
it. He drove a good race. And I did put him in P3 in the last podcast.
Did you?
I did.
I can't even remember who. I think I put... I know I said Bottas to win, which was close, just saying. That was a great shout from me. Didn't win, though. Thanks, Valtteri. Let's actually talk about Valtteri.
I think,
now we're allowed
I
to.
Think he must have been listening to our podcast, because ever since rinsed him, he's just been.
Should we wave in case he's still watching? Let's
Hi, Valtteri.
What's up, bro?
Yeah, he's been as good as Hamilton.
He's been sensational this season. If you compare
him
to
sensational.
Compared to last season,
I'd say sensational. If Hamilton is that good, then Bottas is sensational.
Hold
to
on.
Now.
Hamilton has not turned up yet. Hamilton has not turned up yet. He's still in bed. He's deciding if he wants to turn up.
He should turn
up.
He's not trying.
Valtteri.
Oh, we got the comments.
Valtteri. Let's face
Sam
it.
Sam is not from WTF1.
I still will never forget that Bahrain, wasn't it, where Bottas didn't go for the lunge on Vettel, which
I've forgiven him for that.
It marks him down to me as the kind of driver that he is. I cannot see him as a champion. I can see him as a race winner and a great guy, but he doesn't seem to have that killer instinct. And I can't personally applaud solid drives for second place because
I don't. Not two of you. There's six people in this podcast. Yeah.
But it's personal. He's just not a kind of driver that excites me.
He's not exciting.
That's all. He doesn't excite me. He's a great driver.
To be fair, I do agree with that. I don't think he's championship material, but I will give him credit for kind of his wheel banging with Max at the start.
He got his elbows
out. I'm not going to be bullied out of the way. And, you know, he's driving really well. Like, out-qualified Hamilton on... probably his best track.
I think
if he'd got a few more points in Baku, like he obviously he could be right up there in the
title. He would be, and he deservedly
he deserves to be.
You know, should be up there. And I think Valtteri, you've got to kind of put it into perspective here. He had great drives at Williams. He impressed at Williams. Everyone was really excited to see him to go up to Mercedes. And hasn't been there that long in the grand scheme of things. I know you're supposed to, you know, be straight on it and whatnot, but he has improved, and he's very much up there now with Lewis Hamilton as a teammate.
I'd argue that he's actually the perfect driver to be in with Hamilton because, like you say, he's not aggressive to the point where he's going to do the kind of stuff that Rosberg did, where he forgets to turn you know his car and whatever. But yeah, like if you look at Kimi Raikkonen, where was he, like 26 seconds behind Vettel or something? Where, like, Bottas is picking up really good championship points for Mercedes, and I think they know deep down he's, like you say, he's probably not going to win the title. I very much doubt it, unless Hamilton has some horrendous failures. But he's that solid number two driver, getting those things. And I think after the Hamilton and Rosberg, it's exactly who they need. It's a consistent, solid driver.
Yeah, I feel like he's not there yet. But I think he has the potential.
Agree with the sensational. He's not sensational. He's not going to set like hearts alight and like.
He set my heart alight.
Do you think
if you took that horrible F1 saying of let's put them all in the same car,
Alonso?
Yeah,
clearly he
not. But could you honestly see him beating Vettel, Verstappen, Ricciardo, Hamilton if he decides to wake up? Like,
if he decides to wake up, like Hamilton could easily just be having this slump, and you just yourself said retire.
Retire? No, I agree because I genuinely feel like the heart is gone out of it for him, and that's uninspiring for us to watch. It's upsetting to see Hamilton so unengaged. And you're right, maybe he's just freaking lost it and he's not as good a driver as he was. But I doubt that. I just feel like he's just not. He doesn't look the same in the car. So all I feel like is Bottas, you're right, is a solid, great number two, getting the points. But I think when any of those other drivers turn up, he hasn't, I don't think, got the elbows in him to defeat them.
But maybe that's kind of the point that we were touching on earlier. Like, to be a world champion, you have to play. You have to tick all the boxes and you have to turn up. And Lewis hasn't turned up. So, well, he hasn't turned up for the past couple of races. I don't think he's completely...
Since he won the championship last year.
Yeah, he's just...
He does a lot. Yeah. Let's be honest, he lucked into Baku victory.
Yeah, but he was the first person to admit that.
Yeah, he admitted it.
And Spain was boring, so he just sat out front.
We haven't got much time left, but just a quick question. Like, should we think... No, not sure. Right. Yeah. Like, all of this whole, you know, Lewis's heart isn't in it. Do you think he's thinking about retiring at the end of this year?
Well, he keeps mentioning it, which is weird. Like, he keeps openly talking... Like, obviously not talking about what he's going on to do, but there have been a few things he's like, well, when I'm not here, or... There was that moment in the press conference when Ricciardo was like, oh, when you retire, you can be my agent, and all that kind of thing. And it seems to me to be within touching distance, almost. Like, if it's not this year, maybe it'll be next year.
And I wonder whether the negotiations for his Mercedes contract at the moment are prolonging, because I think he might want quite a lot of break clauses. I feel like maybe that's why they're struggling. Is I think he wants a lot of outs, i.e. if he does or doesn't win the championship, he might want an out. And again, he might just suddenly decide he's not. But I feel like he's using the current state of Formula One as an excuse.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, I'm struggling this year. Oh, I'm not really getting on with the car this year. People are beating me. It's like, oh, well, I'm not very interested anymore. The sport's boring. I'll leave. So it's like he's looking for an excuse to retire. And I remember that Hakkinen year when... You know, was it 2001 or I can't remember when Hakkinen didn't turn up.
You know,
and he just sort of faded into the background, and you're like, what is going on with Hakkinen? And then he had his sabbatical and never came back. And
still hoping.
He's still hoping. Yeah, never know. He did test for McLaren 2006. But I do feel like Hamilton's kind of on that path. I hope, you know, I'm as big a fan as you are, Jess, and I really hope we're wrong. And he suddenly comes back and we have a storm at the end of the season. But
not too good, though. Keep it 1 point between the two.
Take it to Abu Dhabi.
That would be
this year would
awesome.
Be great.
And I used to enjoy Lewis Hamilton, just quickly. Like,
Lewis Hamilton.
That's also a title. But I used to enjoy his personality. Like, you know, he was refreshing. He was so fueled by, you know, just the whole sport. And I see it as well. You know, watching his interview, I don't want to watch his interviews, especially if he's not won, because it's just
moany.
It's just like, come on. It's like a child.
You think you should be the mature one that's been in the sport the longest. You're the four-time world champion that should be setting an example for everyone else. And actually, like when, like you say, when he gets out of the car and he's like, oh yeah, but the sport's a bit rubbish.
Just uninspiring for fans as well.
And like you say, imagine other sportsmen going, oh yeah, I don't really care. It would make everything a lot less enjoyable for everyone.
Right, let's turn it up for a funny thing to talk about before we end this podcast, the checkered flag mix-up.
Wow.
My goodness me, that was a cock-up and a half, wasn't it?
Who spotted it and when? Checkered flag. Did everyone see it straight away?
Yeah. Well, because the thing for me was like, they're waving that for a Force India. What I mean,
That's Raikkonen.
I couldn't work out. Yeah, I was like,
I think at the very start when she started waving it, the Ferrari hadn't even come around the corner yet. So Raikkonen hadn't even come around the corner yet, and I was like, what? They're waving that really? Wait, hang on. What lap counter? Yeah. Where are we? Going on?
But it was so strange, wasn't it? But the backlash. Winnie, whatever her name is.
Winnie Harlow. That's not fair.
Yeah, because it wasn't her fault, was it? I think Charlie Whiting said something about that.
He did. Great point. The starter thought it was the last lap. He asked race control to confirm it. They confirmed it. But they thought he was making a statement when he was asking a question. He just shows it. He showed it a lap early, or he told the flag waver to show it a lap early, so it wasn't anything to do with the fact it was a celebrity flag waver. So there you go. That's from the man himself.
It's funny that it could have quite easily cost... like they're lucky
it could have been set for second.
I mean Jenson Button, because they went two laps
Jenson
back,
Button racing
they? Sorry two laps back. I was already ahead of myself. two laps back
yes,
and was it 2011 when Button overtook Vettel on the last lap? Like, can you imagine if Vettel had run wide, like Bottas somehow caught him,
and
technically, the flag is out, so two laps before we've got to take the thing. And
you were speaking to Dan, who does our websites, and he was like, was it, why does the flag have so much power? Anyone who just wave the flag is over.
Lap two, when their driver's leading, just wave the flag.
It was funny hearing Kimi's on board whilst like it was all going on, because all the marshals were waving their flags, and he was like, how many flags are there? Like, just
nice censorship there, Ali. Did you enjoy that?
You're welcome. Yeah, no. But yeah, he was just like, why are they waving so many flags? And it was just like chaos. Chaos ensued. No one really knew, like, do we slow down? Do we keep pushing? Are people going to start running on the track? We just don't know. It's all up in the air.
That's too many flags.
The commentators didn't even know what they were doing.
I loved the interview with Ricciardo at the end when he realised he'd lost fastest lap.
That was so funny.
Because Ricciardo set fastest lap on the final lap, which, again, is really annoying, because why? But, when it didn't count because... they went two laps back and Max got it, and Ricciardo was on Sky being like, looking at, came up saying Max was having fastest lap, and he was like, no, that's me. And they're like, no. And he's like, what?
He was furious. Well,
they get a bonus, so don't they? And I think he's come out before kind of jokingly talking about the fact like, oh, we get a cheeky bonus if we get fastest lap. So he was like, that's my money. Like, what?
Yeah.
Give me my money.
But then me and you said before the podcast, we're like, I'm sure Red Bull will sort him out if they have to. It's not like it's a rule within the sport or anything. Like, they'll just be like, I'll just chuck him a bit of money.
But you're right, Tommy. Like, it's frustrating to see fastest laps being put in on the final lap.
That's not good.
It's because they probably just explode their tyres and, like, they wouldn't be able to do another lap if they carried
on. Like, it's
a shame.
For the spectators, it's a bit rubbish.
Anyway, driver of the day. We're going to finish with that. Oh. So. I haven't even spoken about Charles yet. Man,
was he your driver of the day?
Charles.
Hi, Charles.
Was he on Twitter the other day?
Oh, hello.
It's getting crazy.
Basically asking you out.
Did you slide in the DMs?
I did. I said, congratulations on your drive. And he said, thanks. And I was like, I don't know how to reply now. Tommy, driver of the day.
Vettel. Easily.
Good.
I'll go Leclerc.
Oh, God, you're a great man. Thanks, Jess.
I think she said Leclerc.
Was that Ericsson?
Yeah. Vettel, probably.
Vettel, okay. And Leclerc. Two for Leclerc, two for Vettel. Renault's really good as well, weren't they? God, we've spoken a lot. Like, Ali's been messaging me, 5 minutes, 1 minute. And that was definitely about 10 minutes ago. But it's fine. It's all good, isn't it? Yeah, you okay? How's WEC? good. Oh, he's like, oh, please end it. Please end it now. he's giving me
he's got to get ready for
right,
Le Mans.
Predictions for France.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, unknown, because we've not raced there.
No.
Yeah,
but we know the drivers, Jess. Hey. Go, someone.
This sounds really bad, but I'm going to say Hamilton, because every time I say Hamilton, he doesn't win. So
it's Hamilton
a power,
hater.
It's a power track. They've got the tyres again that suited them in Spain. So I'm going to say, yeah, Hamilton will get it. No, I'm not. Bottas. Bottas will win.
Bottas, and then who, and then who? We do top three. Bottas, Tommy, come on.
Bottas, Vettel, Hamilton.
Thanks.
I'll swap it around. Hamilton, Bottas. No, Hamilton, Vettel, Bottas.
Hamilton, Vettel, Verstappen.
Bottas, Hamilton, Raikkonen.
You got possessed there for a second.
I know. I was like, not Vettel.
Raikkonen.
All I can think of is Leclerc.
Yeah, I feel Kimi's going to do something once.
Well, maybe
once
he'll just be at the end, like all of his podiums this season have come from like chance. So,
ouch.
Maybe.
What a great time to end. Maybe Kimi. I hope Kimi will at least use not bottle Q3 for once, and then he'll actually have a good result. Anyway, what a lovely
podcast.
Thank you for listening to the air. Thank you, Sam, for coming along. I'm sure we'll get you along another time when you're around, you busy man. Thank you very much for watching.
Slagging people off on Twitter.
Actually.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye, everyone. See ya.
Bye.
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 Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.